It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
He'll actually get sworn in exactly at 9:30 this morning, and he inherits a situation with Russia that is rapidly escalating as President Vladimir Putin orders the United States to cut its diplomatic mission by 755 in response to the new sanctions. The State Department responded in a statement saying, quote, "This is a regrettable and uncalled for act. We are assessing the impact of such a limitation and how we will respond to it." Vice President Pence, traveling in Eastern Europe, also turning up the pressure on Russia's latest provocations.
Russia's destabilizing activities, its support for rogue regimes, its activities in Ukraine are unacceptable. As we make our intentions clear that we expect Russian behavior to change, the president and I remain very hopeful.
And that's not the only international crisis. General Kelly will also have to address the escalating tensions with North Korea as the rogue nation launching more missiles in recent days. And while many expect him to bring a level of military order and discipline to a battered West Wing by infighting, he will also have to find ways to move forward on domestic issues like tax reform and not giving up on health care. That would likely involve working with Democrats. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi indicates that she's optimistic and looks forward to working with the general.
I look forward to working with General Kelly. I've worked with him as, well, Secretary Kelly. It's a very important position, the president, the chief of staff to the president of the United States. And it has to be recognized that he is the chief of staff.
And finally, perhaps, guys, an elephant in the room. Many wonder if a Marine general can tame the president's often undisciplined Twitter habits.
All right, Sandy Rios with you on this Monday morning. Of course, nothing happening, nothing to talk about, but I'll think of something, so stay tuned. All right, that was Griff Jenkins' report from this morning, and I think we'll do it backwards, if that's all right with you. Lieutenant General John Kelly will take his post as Chief of Staff, replacing Reince Priebus, and we'll talk about that. Over the weekend, so much happened. North Korea launched another missile. Now they say they have enough, it looks that they will shortly have enough range to hit most of the United States. And so that's pretty amazing. And so our forces have started sort of sending signals over, actually flying over North Korea along with the Japanese and others, just as a warning. And Donald Trump has said, we are going to use force. This will not happen. And so it's certainly true that things are heating up. The Chinese and the Russians both did a display of military force over the weekend. Who knows why? You know, rattling their sabers. And so as we watch the domestic politics and, you know, get fascinated by the intrigue, the palace intrigue at the White House, things are definitely getting more and more dangerous on the world scene. And that's why we need our president to be in a stable place with good staff. And I'm going to talk to you today about a bunch of staff changes that are really good. And I'm going to talk about that, too. But before I go beyond this, I want to just give you some insight. Perhaps these are things that you know. I knew something, but not as much as I do after reading an article in the Washington Post. Lieutenant General John Kelly, who is he? Well, he lost his son in the war. And I just want to take just a minute, if you'll allow me, to give you some background on him. The story in the Washington Post goes like this. He was standing up to speak. Now, this is during the Obama administration, as I understand it, at the St. Louis Hyatt Regency. And as he said, as he started to get up, he said, "Please don't mention my son." He asked the Marine Corps officer introducing him. 4 days earlier, Second Lieutenant Robert M. Kelly, 29, had stepped on a landmine while leading a platoon of Marines in southern Afghanistan. He was killed instantly. Without once referring to his son's death, the general delivered a passionate and at times angry speech about the military's sacrifice and its troops' growing sense of isolation from society. "Their struggle is your struggle," he told the ballroom crowd of former Marines and local business people. "If anyone thinks you can somehow thank them for their service and not support the cause for which they are fighting, our country, These people are lying to themselves. More important, they are slighting our warriors and mocking their commitment to this nation. He goes on to say that he's the most senior U.S. military officer to lose a son or daughter in Iraq or Afghanistan. And he said the American public is largely unaware of the price its military pays to fight the United States' distant conflicts. Less than 1% of the population serves in uniform at a time when the country is engaged in one of the longest periods of sustained combat in its history. President Obama devoted only 6 sentences to the war in Afghanistan in his State of the Union address in January. And this is the Washington Post writing. Of course, they were fans of John Kelly then because he was working for Obama. You know, it'll be interesting to see what they say later. But back to the story for that moment, the 25-second standing ovation that lawmakers lavished on the troops lasted almost as long as the president's war remarks. And then John Kelly went further. He said, we are only one of 55, speaking of his own son's death, we are only one of 5,500 American families who have suffered the loss of a child in this war. The death of my boy simply cannot be made to seem any more tragic than the others. There are so many things to say about this. It talks about how his son Robert signed up. He was watching, you know, after 2001, he watched as our tanks rolled into Baghdad. And then he joined, his other son joined. And then it talks about his experiences in the military and then how he died. And so I just want you to know that as Lieutenant General John Kelly takes his place as Chief of Staff for President Donald Trump, that's his background. That's the kind of man he is. And I don't know, you know, that's all I can say. I mean, he was at the Department of Homeland Security. I'm going to talk about some of the things that are going on over there right now a little bit later. But of course, since last we spoke, other things took place. The healthcare vote went down about midnight on Thursday night, and this is what the leader of the Republicans had to say, at least in part, on the Senate floor, Mitch McConnell.
Well, clearly a disappointing moment. From skyrocketing costs to plummeting choices and collapsing markets, our constituents have suffered through an awful lot under Obamacare. We thought they deserved better. It's why I and many of my colleagues did as we promised and voted to repeal this failed law. We told our constituents we would vote that way, and when the moment came, most of us did. We kept our commitments. We worked hard, and everybody on this side can certainly attest to the fact that we worked really hard to try to develop a consensus for a better way forward. And I want to thank everybody in this conference for the endless amount of time that they spent trying to achieve a consensus and to go forward. I also want to thank the President and the Vice President, who couldn't have been more involved and more helpful. So, yes, this is a disappointment indeed.
All right, so that's the leader of the Senate Republicans, and I think, you know, it would be hard not to say that when you hear him speak, you see so many holes in his logic. You can understand why it was defeated. You know, I have to remind people that it was Senator Mitch McConnell who spent thousands and thousands of dollars under his direction going into various states, along with the help of John McCain, and defeating conservatives in the primaries. You know, there was a time when Republicans in Washington, there was a code that they would not go into states during primaries. They would let the local people decide who they wanted their candidate to be. And then when the Republican candidate was picked by the people, they would come in and support them. Well, not so anymore. Under the leadership of Mitch McConnell and under John McCain was one of the first persons to do this. He used the money that he had left over from his failed presidential bid against Barack Obama to go in and support really bad candidates in primaries. Mark Kirk was his first pick out of Illinois. And so what's happened is Mitch McConnell and John McCain have managed to stack the Senate with really bad people who don't care about the American interests. They really don't. They further Mitch McConnell's causes and John McCain's causes. And so this is the reason we got the vote. What did he say? We did as we promised. We told our constituents we would vote on repeal, and most of us did. All right, so does that make you want to rush out and send them back to the Senate? You know, you have to, I would have to say, you know, even Lamar Alexander voted against this this bill. And Lamar Alexander is Mitch McConnell's closest friend in the Senate. So what's going on with that? And then you've got Senator John McCain doing what Senator John McCain did. But, of course, Mitch McConnell wants us to believe that they worked really hard. Well, maybe once since I've honestly seen him in that position have I seen the Senate ever work, even come close to working really hard. There are individual members who have. Senator Ted Cruz is certainly an exception. I think Senator Rand Paul is too, Senator Mike Lee, and a few others I may not have thought of. But there is some work going on, but not in the Senate. You know, they love their slow pace, and they love the money that they get. They love their leather chairs. They love their ability to enrich themselves. It's an amazing thing. And excuse me, let me just talk for a second about John McCain, because it's true that there was a lot of work done in the Senate chamber. We know that Vice President Pence was right there on the floor, and he was doing everything he could to try to convince John McCain to vote yes on this so-called skinny repeal. Now, that's another issue. I'm not supporting skinny repeal or whatever they called it, of Obamacare. I'm not in favor of that, honestly, because I wanted full repeal. Didn't you? Didn't you want full repeal? Isn't that what they promised? But I digress. So, but still, they thought they had a path forward, and some of the good guys, most of them really thought this, even Rand Paul was voting for this, and so was Senator Ted Cruz. But McCain, you know, who came back from his illness to be a champion, once again stepped up on the floor. And I just want you to hear the moment, in case you missed it last week, when he stood up to cast his vote. Let's listen. Oh, you didn't get to hear him say McCain votes no. And then that's the response after that was like you could hear people like this sort of thing after he cast his vote. But, of course, now the left was thrilled. McCain is once again their sweetheart. And, by the way, he spent a good portion of his time the night before with Democrats, kind of working things out with them. I have to remind you that we know now that George Soros, the Hungarian atheist billionaire who wants to destroy this country, is a funder of John McCain, of his project in Arizona. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. But I want you to hear what the left, this is a montage created by Grabian, of the left's response to McCain's no vote on the skinny repeal. Let's listen.
Obamacare is failing Arizonans. First, a massive rate hike.
I'm sorry. Twice. Let's say clip four. I switched it on you guys. It's clip four, please.
Senator John McCain living up to his nickname, the Maverick, casting the decisive vote against the GOP's last-ditch effort to repeal major parts of Obamacare.
The words of John McCain, who was indeed a profile in courage tonight, along with two women in the Republican caucus.
McCain rejecting desperate pleas from Vice President Mike Pence.
All right, I'm going to interrupt. You get the idea. They were ecstatic. But then you have to hear, and we do have time for this. Let's just drop in as we listen to the closing music. This is an ad for McCain. Not that long ago, when he was running for Senate, let's listen now to clip three.
Obamacare is failing Arizonans. First, a massive rate hike, more than twice the national average. Then, America's largest health insurer abandoned Arizona's failing Obamacare exchange. That's devastating, especially to rural counties. Congresswoman Ann Kirkpatrick bragged about her Obamacare vote, saying,
"It's also the one I'm most proud about."
While Kirkpatrick's proud of putting us at risk, John McCain is leading the fight to stop Obamacare.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
All right, you get the point, don't you? Oh, a little lying going on, just a little bit, like a whole lot over a long period of time, and yet the people of Arizona have sent him back over and over again. He certainly was a maverick. The Democrats are thrilled. I'll be back.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep, as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website, twholyland.com, for more information. twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
Here's Dan Celia with today's Stewardship Moment.
We certainly know that nothing is impossible for God. But do you believe that? I believe as Christians that we do believe that, except when it comes to our own lives. Maybe that's why it's so difficult to believe God's word when he says that if we continue to be good stewards, when we give sacrificially, our barns will overflow and the floodgates in our life will be opened. I wonder, is disobedience controlling your stewardship and thereby controlling your life?
You've just heard a Stewardship Moment with Dan Celia of Financial Issues Ministry, helping you plan, give, and invest wisely. For more information, log on to financialissues.org. That's financialissues.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Charlie Daniels dropped by my radio show the other day, and he's none too pleased with Congress. He says it's high time for Republicans and Democrats to set aside politics and start looking out for the American working man.
You're sitting over there, Chuck Schumer, on that side, and you're sitting over there, Mitch McConnell, on that side, and you guys act like you're dealing with the devil with each other. Get your act together and sit down and do something. You're not hurting the party. You're not helping the party. You're killing America. You want to be known for killing America?
Now, Charlie Daniels is raising a valid point. I mean, how is it possible that Republicans still can't seem to repeal Obamacare? How is it possible they can't figure out how to secure our borders? The midterm elections will be here before you know it, and unless the Republicans get their act together, they could be riding the backbench. You can check out my full interview with Charlie Daniels on my website, ToddStearns.com. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at Sandy@AFR.net. That's Sandy@AFR.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
7 years, Republicans have been promising the American people that we would repeal Obamacare. And the American people are entirely justified in saying any politician who told me that voted the other way didn't tell me the truth. They lied to me. No party can remain in power by lying to the American people.
Yeah, well, we hope not, actually. You know, certainly not the people that lied. What we need is really good, honest people representing us, do we not? And we're not helpless. You know, I am not hopeless. I'm actually encouraged. Maybe when I get further into what I'm going to tell you this morning, you'll understand why. But I want to, it's not just John McCain who has betrayed the American people, and he certainly has. He has. Multiple times, multiple occasions. But of course, he's not the only one. There are, seven senators who voted, did not do their part, seven Republicans. Lisa Murkowski, listen to what she said when she voted against repeal. When she voted on repeal initially. This law is not affordable for anyone in Alaska. That's why I will support the bill that repeals the ACA and wipes out its harmful impacts. But not so much when she voted. Dean Heller, Nevada. The repeal of this law will not only reduce federal spending, but it will also allow Congress to address problems within the current health care system. Then he voted against the repeal. Shelley Moore Capito, West Virginia. I have consistently voted to repeal and replace this disastrous health care law, and I am glad that a repealed bill will finally reach the president's desk. But she voted against the repeal. Lamar Alexander, the best friend of Mitch McConnell. Obamacare was an historic mistake and should be repealed and replaced with step-by-step reforms that transform the healthcare delivery system. And then he voted against repeal. And I'm talking about the repeal now, the repeal vote, not the skinny bill. Susan Collins, even Susan Collins, I believe that Congress made a real error in passing Obamacare. We should repeal the law so that we can start over. But not so much when she had a chance to vote. She voted against repeal. And then John McCain. It is clear that any serious attempt to improve our health care system must begin with full repeal and replacement of Obamacare. But not so much when he actually voted. So there's a group of people that need to be held to account. And by the way, there is a move. The president's talking about this. There was a letter that went to the president, signed not in part by our own president, Tim Wildman, asking the president to use his pen to remove the Senate and their staff and the House and their staff from being covered by being subsidized for their Obamacare payments, pulling it back so all of them, each and every one of them, will now have to be under Obamacare as it stands. And I have to say, I think that's a brilliant idea. The president's talking about it now, and we'll just see what happens. Also, the president is pushing for the Senate to go back after Obamacare. He's pushing them to change their rules so that they can repeal all of it with a 51 vote, 50 votes plus President Pro Tem of the Senate, which is Mike Pence. Sometimes I try to talk too fast. Did you figure that out? You know, there's this push, and certainly AFA is leading the charge on this too, to drop this filibuster rule that's used on legislation. It was dropped for judicial nominees. It's sacrosanct for some reason to Mitch McConnell and others. Not so sacrosanct to Harry Reid. He was the first one that threw it out so that they could get bad judges in, and they did. They got a lot of them in, and we're paying the price for that, aren't we, in decisions in courts around the country. But the Republicans, the Senate rules and they're sacred, so we can't change them, even though terrible Harry Reid did that. So we're going to be men of honor and integrity to Senate rules, not to you, but to Senate rules. And we're going to get good guys through. So Ron Johnson has a long piece. Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, another kind of mixed bag guy who we thought was going to be really good and get some things right and a lot of things wrong. But Ron Johnson talks about Senate rules, and he says Washington is dysfunctional. This Senate rule could help fix it. He's talking about nominations. He's talking about the amazing jam-up on President Trump's nominations. And let me read at least in part what Senator Johnson writes. By the first August recess of the Obama administration, only four nominees needed cloture votes. That means 60 votes. Democrats, on the other hand, have required more than 30 Trump nominees to go through this burdensome and time-consuming process. Any president, Republican or Democrat, deserves better. But that's not even all of it. They're requiring 30 hours of debate on many of these nominees, and so they just can't get through. He writes, to gain public support for his unprecedented action, Democrats accused Republicans of obstructing the confirmation of Obama's nominees. These accusations ignored the fact that 5 years into Obama's presidency, 1,560 years of his nominees already had been confirmed and only four had been formally blocked. And he talks about the filibuster rule, which is the need for 60 votes, at least on nominations, and he thinks they should alter that rule. And many of us think they should do the same for legislation so they can get tax reform through the border wall, whatever it is that they need to do, and they need to do plenty. So there is talk now about, well, not by Mitch McConnell, but I'm thinking, I was wondering, after McCain, I think, actually did, what words can I choose for that? Let's say McCain surprised them with his no vote. I'm wondering if Mitch McConnell won't reconsider changing these rules, because he's going to have trouble passing anything. It's going to be disgraceful for Mitch McConnell. He's going to have to take the hit for that. And if everything goes, tax reform goes down, if everything the president tries, the important pieces of legislation that must be considered go down because of John McCain, then he might have to change. He might have to think about changing those rules, and I hope that he does. We need him to do that for the sake of the republic. But now here's an interesting thing, because I was reading lots of articles, as I always do. I want to just read you some headlines. Let's see. Okay, here we go. Here's a headline from the LA Times. Obamacare vote isn't the only sign of GOP resistance to Trump. The AP. AP fact check. Veracity is a casualty in a week of infighting. And then another one from The Guardian. Turmoil fused schism between Trump's White House and Republican Party. And then New York Post. Donald Trump is becoming trapped. Okay, so you get the gist of it, right? The narrative from the left, yes, it was a chaotic week, no question about it. And, of course, we're praying that the staff lands on its feet this morning under the leadership of John Kelly. And I'm going to, but I want to tell you what some of these sources are saying now. Here's the first one that I mentioned. Obamacare vote isn't the only sign of GOP resistance to Trump, LA Times. And then in the article, they quote conservatives having all this reluctance support him. Suddenly, they're pulling away. This is what they're inferring. And then this is who they cite. John McCain, Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins. They talk about the transgender decision, and they mention that McCain, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, he objected to both the substance of the ban and also to the way in which it was unveiled. He's, of course, in favor now of transgenders in the military, John McCain, this chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. And of course, he's always been a champion of Trump, right? Because he's one of the conservatives listed in this article who is, now just freshly decided to resist Trump. Lindsey Graham, they cite. They also cite a Republican operative who worked for Bush, who has been a never-Trumper for forever. They cite Erickson, who was a never-Trumper. He always was and always, it seems, must always will be. And so that's their big hit, is that now suddenly conservatives are opposing the president, which we know is not true. These are not conservative people. They never did support President Trump. Now, this is the most important thing I picked out of this article, though. Now, the August recess, however much of a mystery it might be about whether the Senate will actually recess and for how long, that leaves the gap for potential presidential recess appointments, which means the president can appoint all kinds of people. They don't have permanent status, but he can appoint them and they can serve, I think, for 6 months. And it probably depends on which appointment, but that gives you a general idea. So it says if both parties agree, a senator will stay in town on a rotating basis to technically avoid having the Senate in recess. So in other words, they can stop the president from these appointments if one senator stays in town to sort of pretend as though the Senate is not out of session. Now, I can imagine that the Democrats would be game to do that, but here's what they report. Now, this is the LA Times, and I haven't asked anyone else about this. Republicans did that to prevent President Obama from avoiding Senate confirmations and filling vacancies with recess appointments, but now Republicans have signaled they are not willing to let Trump undercut their authority either. I haven't verified that, but that's what the LA Times is reporting. So in other words, they're reporting, they say that the Republicans are going to cooperate with the Democrats to leave a senator behind so that they don't technically recess so that he can't make any appointments. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what they're reporting. All right, now I want to get, oh no, I got to finish this because I want you to, this is the AP fact check. Okay, AP, Associated Press, man, they're the number one news source, right? Remember when they were so trusted? I do. Even in the old movies, you can hear, the AP, it's coming across the AP wire, always a trusted source of news. But this is what they do. They have listed a whole set of so-called corrections about lies that were told by Donald Trump or his administration. And they enumerate all of them and spell them out. And I just want to pick one out for you. This is an example of what they call a lie. Trump, in a tweet, Problem is that the acting head of the FBI and the person in charge of the Hillary investigation, Andrew McCabe, got $700,000 from Hillary for a wife. That's the tweet. Oh, but the AP is all over this, and this is the correction. That's wrong. McCabe's wife, Jill McCabe, did not get $700,000 in donations from Hillary Clinton. He did not. She did not receive seven. She got it from Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe's Political Action Committee and the Virginia Democratic Party. And, of course, McAuliffe was head of Mrs. Clinton's reelection campaign and also Bill Clinton's before, and was a huge chief fundraiser for them. But it is wrong. It's a lie to say that McCabe's wife got it from the Clintons, because Terry McAuliffe's Political Action Committee actually wrote out the check. And then the second part of the lie: those donations happened before the FBI says McCabe was promoted to deputy director of the FBI and took a supervisory role in the Clinton email investigation. He became acting director in May after Trump fired James Comey. Well, the point is that this is McCabe's background. His wife received $700,000 from Terry McAuliffe, joined at the hip with the Clintons, and McCabe was put in charge regardless of when the donation came. It came before, so fine. Do you think maybe he might have a preference? He's supposed to be objective and investigating Mrs. Clinton's email, but I've told that story many times before, no need to belabor it. But that's the kind of facts, that's the kind of things they're saying are lies. And so, man, you just can't trust anybody anymore. Honestly, I mean, you can't trust your sources. It's just like I read that LA Times thing to you just now, and I don't trust it until I hear it verified that the Republicans are not leaving town for recess so that President Obama, Trump cannot make recess appointments. I'm not going to believe it just because it's in the LA Times. You can't. All right, so moving on to this. This is from The Guardian. It talks about the schism between Trump's White House and the Republican Party. That's a new narrative. And it says, with the purge of establishment Republicans from the White House staff, many in the GOP are becoming more open in their criticism. Well, of course, I have to say that they quote, like, Charlie Sykes. Charlie's from Milwaukee. He hates Donald Trump. He has from the beginning. He's a talk show host. He was. I'm not sure he's on the air in Milwaukee anymore, but he hated Trump. So he's supposed to be the new, you know, opponent, but he's not. But the best part about this article, the most interesting, which is not quite related to what I'm saying, is this. Priebus, whose 189-day tenure was the shortest in modern history for a White House chief of staff, followed Deputy Chief of Staff Katie Walsh, Communications Director Mike Dubke, Press Secretary Sean Spicer, and Press Aide Michael Short in being axed or opting to resign. One by one, Trump's links with the party establishment are being severed. And, you know, that's good news. I want to put an exclamation point. Yay, thank goodness, finally. You know, Katie Walsh has been known as a leaker. I had journalist friends of mine tell me everyone knows, don't tell Katie anything. And yet Reince Priebus put her in the White House with privileged information every day of what was going on in there. And then all these leaks started. And of course, Reince Priebus has been accused of leaking. And so I want you to hear, I've got a second here. I want you to hear what Reince Priebus, when he left. All right, I need to slow down. Reince Priebus resigned last Thursday night privately, so he says. And then when he left the White House on Friday, he went to write to CNN. And you know what? We're not going to have time to play this before the break, so I'm going to take my time and explain this a little bit better. Let me just say that it has been observed that the fact that Reince Priebus allegedly resigned on Thursday night is just about the only thing that hasn't leaked out of the White House. And so Reince has not really denied being the leaker. You heard Scaramucci accuse him in those, you know, profanity-laced comments to a reporter. But Priebus has not really denied that he was the leaker. And so that's part of the interesting part of the story. We'll see. You notice that things have not been leaking over the weekend? I have noticed that. I'm going to come back with a few clips from Reince Priebus on CNN. Because it makes it really interesting and intriguing. And there's oh so much more, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Blessed be the Lord, my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle.
My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. President Trump has announced transgender individuals will not be allowed to serve in the U.S. military. The bold decision facilitates the military's focus on service members' mental and physical fitness to fight. Studies show 41% of transgender persons have attempted suicide. People who've undergone sex reassignment surgery are 19 times more likely to die by suicide. The president's decision bolsters military readiness and thereby protects the American people. Our forces must remain fixed on lethality and national defense, not social engineering.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
David Butts of Harvest Prayer Ministries challenges us to see prayer as a gracious gift from God.
Show us, Lord, how to pray with greater effectiveness. Lord, help us to understand more of your heart in our city, in our churches, in our nation, literally around the globe.
The Gift of Prayer is a powerful new DVD that teaches us the importance of prayer. It's a great resource for your church or family. Available for purchase or download from the AFA Cultural Institute at afastore.net.
What is the most important truth that you'll ever hear? Here's Pastor Jeff Shreve.
What is the message of the cross of Jesus Christ? The cross of Jesus Christ just screams out, I love you.
Discover the power that is available to you through the cross of Christ. Join Pastor Jeff Shreve on From His Heart each weeknight at 6 Central here on American Family Radio.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
I think income ultimately is the most important thing that we protect. I know one thing, and I know this from sitting across a lot of tables from a lot of people over the years, that at some point in time, maybe it's 75, maybe it's 85, there will be a point in time where the only thing you care about is how much income you have coming in. Don't let your portfolio be 100% subject to the volatility in the markets or dependent upon the market. Shore up some permanent income along with Social Security and your maybe a pension. Have some charitable gift annuity to shore that up. I hope you'll call the AFA Foundation today and find out more detail about a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump has begun cleaning house at last. It has clearly been extraordinarily frustrating for the president to have people in key jobs that were either incompetent, disloyal, or both. It has been simply infuriating for millions of us who want him to succeed. That has been especially true with respect to the National Security Council under Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. Since he took the job of National Security Advisor, McMaster has systematically undermined the president's policies, reportedly leaked sensitive information, and hired Obama holdovers and others hostile to the Trump agenda while firing a number of those loyal to it. It's an open secret that the commander-in-chief has understandably lost confidence in this general. It's time, as MacArthur memorably put it, for that old soldier to fade away before he does more damage to the president and the national interest. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Just to piggyback on what Frank just said, Frank Affney, Sarah Carter from Sirica was reporting over the weekend that the insiders are saying that General McMaster, who is the head of the National Security Committee, has been leaking information out of the White House to McCabe, Andrew McCabe, who is the acting director of the FBI. That's what Sarah is reporting. And I have to tell you that Sarah Carter, now I said you can't trust anyone. Some sources you can. And Sarah has proved to be, Sirica, C-I-R-C-A, has proved to be one of those sources that reports some incredible things, and they turn out to be true. So discussions are going on. I don't know who's talking about it. I don't know what's happening. Maybe it's coming out of justice. I don't know. McMaster leaking to McCabe, the head of the FBI, that's really something. And speaking of leaking in the FBI, this also a story by Sarah Carter that came out over the weekend. Are you sitting down? The FBI's top lawyer is allegedly under investigation for purportedly leaking classified material featured in a Reuters report last year that disclosed a top-secret U.S. surveillance program built by Yahoo, Inc., according to several government officials with knowledge of the investigation. And could I say, because Sarah is getting such a good reputation, she's getting more leaks. People are coming out of the woodwork to talk to Sarah and to get her to print, which she does, what they are telling. And she's being very careful about how she's sourcing. This stuff is very serious. His name is James Baker. Again, he's the FBI's top lawyer. He's the general counsel for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He's the top lawyer to the top law enforcement agency. Very close to James Comey, appointed by James Comey. Allegedly, he's under criminal investigation for an apparent connection to the story published October 2016. It's a program that had not been disclosed by the U.S. government. And this is what a senior government official with close knowledge of the intelligence community alleged, that Baker opposed this software program and has in his position at the FBI held up, well, this I know is true. I know this is true. This second part I can tell you is true. That in his position at the FBI, he routinely held up Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act FISA warrants in the FISA court, even right after 9/11. He did that. So, nevertheless, he's received all of these awards from the Bush administration, and now it looks like he's under criminal investigation for purportedly leaking a top-secret program. I don't know who he leaked it to, but that's unbelievably serious. You know, these people that are, McMaster included, these are serious offenses. These are things that people who have served government and had security clearances for decades would never do, or they end up in prison. And so we are in an unprecedented time, but I have to tell you that the good guys are still batting away. There are really good men who are stepping up to the plate and trying to do what they can. And I can't say at this point that you can call which way this thing is going to go. I really don't. But I just know that there is a fierce fight going on. And with that, I want to just for a second, drop in a clip, because Sebastian Gorka is still at the White House, still very much involved in the national security scene. And Sebastian appeared on BBC just this past week after the president tweeted his intent to stop the transgender policy in the military that Obama had put in place. Sebastian, of course, now I've been on BBC too, and you have to understand that when you do this, the BBC is more hostile to this subject, and so is French television, any other European television. They're always hostile. They think you are absolutely out of your mind if you ever draw lines, moral lines in the sand. And so Sebastian, as only Sebastian can, defended the president on his decision. Let's listen.
The military is not a microcosm of civilian society. They are not there to reflect America. They are there to kill people and blow stuff up. They are not there to be socially engineered. We want people who are transgender to live happy lives, but we want unit cohesion and we want combat effectiveness. There are leading studies from the medical establishment, for example, that state that the transgender community has a 40% suicide attempt rate. That is a tragedy. We need to help those people. We don't need to try and force them into the hierarchical military environment where they are under the utmost pressure to kill or be killed. And that is why the president is doing this out of the warmth of his consideration for this population.
All right, excellent. Excellent. I don't know how, I wish I could have seen that whole interview. I really do, because I've been there, done that. They're usually quite hostile, and I'm sure Sebastian handled them very well. But the president now has to put these policies in writing, because you probably heard that the Joint Chiefs issued some snarky statement. I just thought of it. I would have brought it to the studio here, in which they, rather than saying, as soon as the president sends us directives, we'll put this policy in place, They really responded in sort of rebellious statement, like they were outraged and indignant. It was just kind of an amazing statement. But, you know, as I've told you, the LGBT arm of the Pentagon is strong and powerful. They have become entrenched during the Obama administrations, and they're not going to go down lightly. And I'm sure this battle is not over. I don't know what they're going to do next, but I'm sure they'll think of something. I'm sure about that. But Sebastian's still in there swinging away. The president did tweet his intent, and now they are saying that they're writing these policies up. They will do them in the proper way, and the Pentagon will be ordered by the president, by the commander-in-chief, to implement his policy on that and to reverse the Obama decision on it. That's good news, and there's more good news. We just heard, this just came out yesterday. Are you ready? Okay. So, I often lose names these days. Anyway, the general who's taking over as chief of staff, Kelly, who just left Homeland Security. It's interesting that another story should come out now about Homeland Security, and it is this. George Saleem, a prominent Obama administration holdover known for engaging fringe Islamic radicals, has resigned from the Department of Homeland Security. Saleem left his post as director of countering violent extremism, a senior administration official confirmed to Conservative Review on Sunday. He resigned on Friday following his testimony Thursday before the House Oversight Committee. A source familiar with the situation explained that Saleem often clashed with Trump administration officials who sought to do away with the past president's policies. You know, I'm going to just put this in my own words. We've talked about countering violent extremism, CVE. It was established at least more fully under Barack Obama. He made much of this. And, of course, the bottom line is this program is going on all over the country, supplied by millions of your tax dollars. And the idea is to talk to people in the community about, just have dialogue about, you know, stopping violent extremism. But ironically, what's happened is that Muslim groups like Council for American Islamic Relations have been paid, let's say, millions of dollars for dialoguing with, you know, locals to try to, you know, tap down this extremism. Because CARE is so moderate, you know. They're the reasoned voice of the Muslim Brotherhood, the stealth jihad group that wants jihad as much as any other group. They just want to do it by bringing us down politically and destroying, as they say, our miserable house from within. But I digress. So George Saleem was well connected with them. The CVE program was all about getting millions of dollars to Muslim groups. That's what it was about. And it's been a battle in the Department of Homeland Security since President Trump took office. And some said that Kelly wasn't as strong on this as he needed to be. He's a product of the military. And sometimes you find that these guys, I know for a fact that the FBI director, even Mueller, and even others whose names I can't mention, were absolutely clueless, probably know less than you listening to me, about how Islamic doctrine spells out the conquering of people and outgrowing them and subduing them, subjecting them. They don't know much about that. So some of them honestly think that this reaching out and paying Muslim groups to reach out with them is a great idea, because they just are, they're either, I don't know, you fill in the blank about what they might be. Under President Obama, I think it was intentional. He knew exactly what he was doing. I do not think there was any innocence in his attempt to solidify this program. But here's the deal. George Saleem is gone. He is gone. He was previously part of the White House National Security Council, working with Ben Rhodes and Susan Rice. And then now he's been, you know, with the Trump administration and the Department of Homeland Security whispering in John Kelly's ear for the last 6 months, and now he's gone. Listen, we need to be grateful for that. That's a big deal. That is, I'll read to you what a friend of mine said. The sound you hear is the swamp draining. And I think that's true. Republican establishment being drained out of the White House and now some of the bad folks in national security. And back to the White House. I need to go back to that. Nope, I'm going to do the rest of this first. Devin Nunes, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, is accusing top political aides of President Obama of making hundreds of requests during the 2016 presidential race to unmask the names of Americans in intelligence reports, including Trump transition officials. I've discussed this with you, but what you don't probably know is that Thursday, Devin Nunes, who's been silent, because remember, he's being investigated for ethics offenses after he made that public statement, after seeing what he saw in the basement of the White House, in the office wing, what was happening and how Trump operatives were being unmasked and investigated by countless numbers of Obama officials not authorized to look into these kind of things, unmasking their names, reading their private, listening to their private conversations. It's a very serious thing. And so Nunes came out of the woodwork to write a letter. He said that the total requests for Americans' names by Obama political aides numbered in the hundreds during Obama's last year in office. And, of course, U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power's name continually comes up as one of the most serious offenders on this. But also we know that Susan Rice and the head of the CIA, John Brennan, also were involved in this. And, of course, countless others, I'm sure, as we hear more. And then I want to tell you this, the Judiciary Committee, this is amazing. Now, this really is amazing because I think Bob Goodlatte from Virginia has kind of straddled the fence on his loyalty to the party and his maybe conservative base in Virginia. I'm no judgment about Bob Goodlatte, except that he's the head of the Judiciary Committee, but this I will praise him for. Today they sent a letter to the Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein calling for the appointment of a second special counsel to investigate unaddressed matters, some connected to the 2016 election and others, including many actions taken by the Obama administration. Officials like Attorney General Loretta Lynch, FBI Director James Comey, and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. So they're asking for another special counsel because they allege that the Bob Mueller, his special counsel's office, seems to be directed only at Trump and nothing else about the 2016 election. You know, Frank Gaffney, I don't know the name of the... There's such a scandal with the Clintons, one of many. In terms of what they gave to the Russians, it's just amazing. More intelligence and highly sensitive knowledge about equipments that the Russians are now using. It's a scandal that has yet to be told. And so these kinds of things need to be investigated. And so Bob Goodlatte and his committee is asking the Attorney General to appoint another special counsel, this one to investigate. By the way, they have a huge, long list of things that they want to be investigated. I circled just a couple of them. Post-election accusations by the president that he was wiretapped by the previous administration and whether Mr. Comey and Ms. Lynch had any knowledge of efforts made by any federal agency to unlawfully monitor communications of then-candidate Trump or his associates. Any and all potential leaks originated by Mr. Comey and provided to author Michael Schmidt dating back in 1993. You see how this is going? And so it seems to me the good men are waking up. And we need to pray for them. We need to pray for them. There are heroes on the Hill doing everything they can to push back. And I have to think, you know, I think that President Trump is doing the best he can, too. And now perhaps the Reince Priebus is gone. And he's not surrounded by establishment Republicans who want him to fail. I predict the leaks are going to stop. And I predict we're going to be seeing some progress here. But that doesn't mean the resistance has stopped. It doesn't mean that. It's going to be a battle tooth and nail. But I am optimistic this morning. And I thought maybe you'd like to know that because I'd like for you to have some hope too. Always, though, our hope is in God. It isn't in politics. I know that's true and you do too, right? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.